Good morning. It's great to be here. It's great to be with BBI. I was in Australia with them, and they do a fantastic job of getting this information out. I happen to represent an organization called the National Corn Growers Association, and we're farmers. We're allowed to have vision. We're allowed to do things out in the country that we have time to do it, and riding a tractor back and forth in the field gives you time to think. That allows for visionary thinking, and that's on what we're doing. Years ago, and some of us are older and we want to admit, we drove those gas-a-haul cars and tried to get things moving back in the early 70s and even before that, the 60s, couldn't get it done because the 20th century was a hydrocarbon economy. We all knew that. We just wanted to move on from that, but we have. The 21st century will be a carbohydrate economy, and we know that, and we're very happy to have that happen. We tried this before World War I, and then the World War came on, and boom, hydrocarbons came. We tried it in the 70s with Carter. We had one problem. We were a supply-controlled economy at that time, and that was a disaster. Let's look back and see what happens on that. And with the 2002 and the 90s farm bills, what happened under that consideration? But before I get to that, I want to mention four things that were very important. Number one, we have to understand in the world, and this is a very difficult thing for many people to understand, supply creates demand in agriculture. And everything else in the world, demand creates supply, but not in agriculture. And what I produce, supply creates demand. That's one thing that we have to remember. It's very critical here. The second thing is the world is short of two things, protein and energy. That's what they're short of. Now, I'll get back to that a little later here, but remember that thing. The third one is sun, the solar power of sun is brand new money when it shines on a green leaf. When you drill an oil well in the ground and oil comes up, it's brand new money for wherever the well is. The sun is brand new money every day if we do it in photosynthesis, and that is very critical. And number four, what is the premium for security? What is it? We need to understand that. Now, in backing this up a little bit, in 2005, I'm a farmer in Minnesota. Bob said Missouri, but he's close. It's in the United States. But anyway, in rural Minnesota where I farm, we had $1.20 for our corn in the fall of 2005. There's no way that we could have planted corn in 2006 without a farm bill because my banker wouldn't have loaned me money to plant something that I was losing money on. 2006, in the fall, we had $3.60 corn. That's three times the value. The only reason we could do that is because we had a farm bill. Now, think back of the supply creating demand. We had a vision years ago. We had a vision, and that's what this organization, BBI, and that's what you are. You have a vision. We had a vision of what was going to happen. Sure, it took longer than we wanted to get here. We had some lawsuits. We had some countries saying our farm bill is really bad. It's all bad. But if you have the vision and stick to it, it will happen. Now, today, look at where we are. In 2005, the newspaper said cheap corn was causing obesity. Wow. 2006, high-priced corn's carbon is causing starvation. Interesting, isn't it? Yeah, if we flip around like that, a vision is longer than a month, 2 months, 6 months, 5 years. A vision is a vision. When I farm, if I'm going to buy land, it's over 40, 60 years. It's not short-term. And that's where this renewable fuels is. That's where the carbohydrate economy is. It's an amazing thing when we talk about that because we have the food versus fuel. You know, we had that issue. We had the issue with the carbon. But think about the trade. Before we get to trade, I want to tell you one thing. Renewable fuels has changed the world. And ethanol has been the one to do it. Ethanol from grass. That's what we talk about, ethanol from grass. Now, it's been from the fruit of the grass. It's been from sorghum, corn, barley, wheat, whatever it is. But it's grass. It's basically where it's coming from. And that's where we need to move on in the future. Number one thing, don't underestimate scientists and producers. That's what the president was talking about here when we talk about $35, $36 billion don't underestimate us as producers, and don't underestimate the scientists that will make this happen. We're saying this can't happen, that can't happen. It all can happen, and it will happen. And what happens is, if we get back and we really think about our protein and energy, what the world's short of, yes, trade. Remember that. Trade. We're in a global trade. We're in a global world economy. Trade is absolutely critically important. But how we trade and what we trade becomes more important. The world has starch, can produce starch, can't produce a protein. So what we need to do is move protein around the world and energy. That's the two things we're short of. In the United States, we'll speak from the United States, that's where I live. I love this country. There's people from other countries, and I hope you love your country as much as I love this country. We can produce the starch in any place. There's only a few countries in the world, a few areas in the world, I think four or five, if you think about the solar panel, that make enough from the sun to export. The rest of them make enough to survive. When we talk about trade, we have undeveloped countries. The poor countries of the world, think of it, they couldn't have bought my corn if it was 50 cents a bushel. There's no way for them to buy my corn. But at $4 or $3.50 a bushel, they can raise it. In South Africa, they can raise corn today because there's a price in it that they can do it. They raise the corn. We supplement that corn with some protein. They sell it. Guess what happens when they sell it? They go from $1 a day to $2 a day. They double their income like I was going to say some of the people here I know went from $50,000 to $100,000, but that's I'm not going to say that. But anyway, they have doubled their income. Yeah, we taught them how to fish. We did not give them the fish. That's when it works. Now, they're going to spend that in their country because they're not traveling any place. They spend it to somebody else who spend it to somebody else. You talk about economic development, that's economic development. That came about because supply determines demand, and we have a supply because a farm bill created a supply. And we had the vision of what we were going to do with it when it happened. Mexico, I hope that for people in here who love to drink tequila, buy it up. Because it's not going to be where it was, because they're going to plant corn in that ground. That economy is going to grow tremendously from the farmer, from the producer on up. Now, when you do that, they tell us in the United States that we are environmentally unfriendly. You just heard Bob talk about the carbon. Corn. I'll talk about corn because I'm with the corn growers. It can be anything. Well, maybe it can't be anything, but things close to that. Corn on corn on corn creates new soil. Interesting, isn't it? Yes, it does. We create humus. We create organic matter. We have better soil today where I raise corn on corn on corn than I had 25 years ago. That's what's great about corn on corn. Now, it might not be corn 20 years from now. It might be another crop that's just as fantastic. That's okay. The mission statement of National Corn Growers says we are to create opportunities for corn growers. It might not be corn in the future, but it might be a better corn in the future. We don't know that. So the four things we need to understand whenever we remember that is, remember, supply creates demand. That's very critical. Very critical to remember that. Number two is, the world's short of only two things, protein and energy. Let's transport the protein around and the energy around, not the whole raw material, because transportation is too costly today. Crude went up. We can't move the volume. We move the value. And we can do that in every place in the world. The United States, we're not going to move the energy out because we're short. We'll move the protein out. Some other country might have excess energy and move it out and keep the protein. We don't know that. But make sure you understand that transportation costs have increased so bad, we need to think about it. And every time you take a raw material and convert it into something higher value, economic development, that's what we want in the world. And we met the sun, the third thing, the sun, that's free, brand new, creates energy. And I do not know the cost, the premium for security, but I know 9/11 brought it to my attention. I know the hurricanes brought it to my attention. That's in the United States, I'm sure. In other countries, you've had something similar. I hope you never have a 9/11 in any place else in the world. That is not a friendly thing. The second thing is I hope the hurricanes don't happen, but sometimes we need hurricanes to get rain, and somebody suffers from somebody else, and that is another thing. When we do this economic development, let's not abuse the people in the world as we do it. Let's bring up their standard of living as we do this. That's very critical. In where I live in rural Minnesota, through the rural development part of the USDA, our economy has grown tremendously. We have a lot of pigs, as he said, on our farm, a lot of pigs. We fertilize two-thirds of our land from the waste from the pig. We don't move the corn a long ways, short distance, feed mill, back into the pig, take the waste, fertilize it, we move the protein. That's what the world needs, move the protein. That's how it happens. But we have that happening in rural America. We have programs in our government. We don't maybe like government all the time. They're there. They ain't going away. Let's use them. They're there for opportunities. Let's have them create opportunities. And that's what we'll do. And we have with us today somebody who I really love, who has caused my area to become a developing area and bring our young people back into the farms, back into the communities in processing. It's called the rural development part of our USDA through our undersecretary. And I personally know this fellow, and I'm going to introduce him to you because he has caused my area to become very financially prosperous. And at this time, I want to introduce to you Mr. Tom Bodor, a friend of mine who's done so much for the rural America.
Thank you very much, Gerald. That was very kind of you. It's a very kind introduction, and I must tell you, it's a good morning. It's a good morning to be back in St. Louis and to be back with you. It's a distinct honor for me to be here at this conference. And over the last year or two, I've remarked more than once, as a lifelong corn farmer from Marcus, Iowa, that $4 corn may just, in fact, drive me back to the planter and the combine. Now, I realize that the corn price has dropped about 50 or 60 cents here in the last week and a half, and for those of you producing ethanol, that's good. But nevertheless, after listening to Jerry, I think the temptation is getting stronger than ever. You know, the ethanol revolution is a tremendous thing for agriculture. I remember when my father, back in the 1970s, was working with a number of the corn grower leaders in Iowa, Thurman Gaskell and Verrill Bailey, to initiate the first ever voluntary checkoff. That actually was implemented 30 years ago this summer. I think it's a great time to celebrate that. But I remember that effort on that first fuel, or ethanol checkoff, and that was at the time when we thought ethanol was mostly for sipping. But nevertheless, we've come a long, long way. And yet, as you've heard from the speakers before me this morning, we are really essentially just getting started, even after three decades of hard work. So I, like many of my predecessors, would like to begin by acknowledging and thanking all of you and for your continuing and decisive contribution to what is rapidly becoming an extraordinary, in fact, a stunning American success story. Because without all of you, we would still be easily at square one, without a doubt. The truth is that all the speeches in the world have never turned one spade of dirt. They've never poured one yard of concrete. It's easy to talk about the ethanol revolution, or more broadly, about the renewable energy or the renewable fuels revolution. But that talk really doesn't get it done. You get it done. You individually, you who are working and what you're doing is more profoundly important than all of our talk. It's important for America's national security. It's important for our energy independence. It's important for our environment. And last but certainly not least, it's important for rural America and rural economic development. You are literally building out a new energy infrastructure in America. This is an enormous undertaking, and I would submit to you that even though you, those of you who are working in this industry, understand it and appreciate it, the scope of what you're doing is barely understood by most of America. Ethanol is, in fact, also just a part of this. Last October, as was mentioned earlier by Bob Dineen, in this very building, down the way a bit, in a little bit smaller hall, I had the privilege of standing with President Bush, Secretary Johann, Secretary Bodman, EPA Administrator Steve Johnson, at a conference that we entitled Advancing Renewable Energy, an American Rural Renaissance. What was the significance of that? The participation of the President and three Cabinet Secretaries in and of itself sent a huge and very powerful message. To my knowledge, never before have a President and three Cabinet rank of officers shared a stage to lend support to renewable energy. So make no mistake about it. The policy commitment to renewables is strong. President Bush, Secretary Johans, and Secretary Bodman are all a distinct commitment to that effort. And at that very meeting, a meeting that was sponsored by USDA Rural Development and co-sponsored by DOE, at that very meeting, we were joined quite specifically by 1,400 other leaders from industry, including the automobile and the oil industries, agriculture, the research community, academia, banking and financing, and local government. Many of you, I suspect, were also here. All were there because they see and have seen the opportunity in renewable energy and were determined to seize it. And we all collectively and individually still are. Ethanol, though, as you know, is the leading edge of the renewables revolution. You all know the figures. We've tripled ethanol production capacity in this decade. We're going to double it again in the next couple of years. And thanks to you, the United States is now unequivocally the world leader in ethanol production. We're headed to a 12 to 15 billion gallon corn ethanol industry, perhaps higher if the optimists are right, and I happen to be one of those optimists. The first generation of ethanol in commercial scale cellulosic plants is being built now, and that's just in the area of ethanol. But just for the record, there's a lot more that's riding this wave. Installed wind capacity in the United States has quadrupled since 2000. In 2005 and 2006, we led the world in new capacity construction. And believe it or not, Texas, by the way, is now the nation's leading wind energy state because of a renewable portfolio that was signed into law by then-Governor George W. Bush in 1999. And on another front, biodiesel production has gone from virtually nothing, 2 million gallons in the year of 2000, to this past year, 245 million gallons, is projected to be 375 million gallons this year, on its way to 700 million gallons. It's hard to put a number on solar power because there are so many different technologies involved in this particular area. But nevertheless, the growth is incredibly rapid. Feedstock substitution is just yet another opportunity. Bio-based feedstocks currently provide about 2% of the U.S. chemical industry's needs. Biochemical feedstocks could easily meet 20% of our needs within the next 20 years. Excuse me, that is just a back-of-the-envelope estimate. I wouldn't treat it at this point as anything more than suggestive. But whatever the precise figure is, the potential is large and a lot of it will come out of biorefineries that you collectively are involved in building and designing today. At USDA Rural Development alone, from 2001 through 2006, we've invested nearly $500 million in more than 1,100 renewable energy and energy efficiency projects all across the country, and that was leveraged with an additional $1.5 billion. Everything from wind to anaerobic digesters to geothermal to biofuels and solar. Looking ahead, we honestly expect this to be a rapid increase in growth. For the 2007 Farm Bill that the President has proposed, we have proposed a series of major new initiatives that involve a number of things, starting with, first, $2 billion proposed loan guarantee for cellulosic ethanol plants. We've also proposed $500 million, which is a major expansion for our major renewable energy and energy efficiency grants program. We're looking at another $500 million to be used to significantly increase biomass and cellulosic ethanol research at USDA and through our ARS labs and other institutions. And we've also proposed an additional $100 million for the cellulosic bioenergy program to provide direct support to producers of cellulosic ethanol. And while I can't predict what Congress will ultimately enact in the next farm bill, I will assure you that the President and the Secretary have set the bar incredibly high, and I do believe that Congress concurs in many of these areas. The bottom line is simply this. As has been explained more than once this morning already, the entire sector is in transition. I know you've been busy, and so have a lot of others. And obviously, much of this has been driven by $60 barrel oil and $3 gasoline. And in the long run, we all know that markets ultimately drive everything. But when oil was $15 and $20 a barrel, the numbers didn't work. We know that they work now. However, I would suggest to you at the same time that some of this has been driven by policy. It's ancient history to recall it today. At least it's ancient political history. But President Bush made a comprehensive national energy strategy, the first strategy paper released in his administration in May of 2001. And that has been followed with an energy title in the 2002 Farm Bill, the first ever, a series of pro-renewables energy tax incentives, the Energy Policy Act of 2005, the Advanced Energy Initiative 2006, the 2010 initiative announced this year, and the pro-ethanol initiatives in the President's Farm Bill proposal. These are over seven major policy initiatives by this administration, initiated by this President alone. What I am suggesting to you is that policy working in tandem with markets is an incredibly powerful combination. We sometimes lose track of that when we talk about energy policy. I'm not going to dwell on the policy that we didn't follow up on the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, but hopefully we collectively have learned from those experiences. But in the end, it's you. It's the researchers, the engineers, the investors, the project managers, the folks that make these plants run from day to day who get it done in the real world. And so again, I, on behalf of the Secretary and the President and myself and all of us who are interested in this, thank each and every one of you, because you collectively are making a major, major difference. You know, when the history of the renewable fuels revolution is written, I actually believe that this decade is going to stand out as a point of inflection. It is true. There are no quick fixes. The energy sector is huge. Renewables, including ethanol, are building out from a relatively low base. And we know that coal and oil, natural gas, and nuclear will continue to dominate the energy picture for years to come. But at the margins, the picture is in fact shifting, and it's shifting rapidly. The growth curves that I've just described are compelling. You are building the future, and for rural America, this is a future of incredible and extraordinary and, in fact, stunning promise in my view. It is sometimes overlooked, but I assure you at USDA, we never overlook it. We never overlook the fact that renewable energy is, for the most part, rural energy. Americans last year spent more on imported oil than they did for every bushel of wheat, ear of corn, bag of cotton, every hog, every steer, every apple, every tomato, everything produced. That bears repeating. I wish you to clearly embed this in your mind. The cost of oil imports today exceeds the total value of agricultural production in the United States. And every drop of imported oil is potentially a takeaway opportunity for each and every one of you. And for American farmers, and especially for rural America, and in the long run, for all of America. Biofuels alone, without even considering wind, solar, and other renewables, are probably the greatest wealth opportunity, the opportunity for wealth creation in rural America in our lifetimes, even in that of my father's lifetime. And that's the potential that we are determined to seize upon. At USDA Rural Development, we are essentially an investment bank for rural America. We have a portfolio of over $96 billion that is invested in rural housing, rural infrastructure, community facilities, generation, transmission, renewable energy of all sorts. And renewable energy, frankly, is just a part of that portfolio. Why? Because from a strategic standpoint, it is a critically important part. But we understand that an ethanol plant isn't just about corn and enzymes. It's about steel and concrete, trucking and railroads, water and power infrastructure, new jobs, more families in town, banking insurance, a whole host of things, but in the final analysis, it's about more kids in school, and what really counts, it's about families and ultimately nothing more basic than a few more pizzas delivered on Saturday night to families that have great jobs and can afford to live in rural America where it's safe and it's secure, and we're contributing to that. We are, in fact, eager to work with each and every one of you to realize this potential. There are new business opportunities at every point in the value chain, from research labs to equipment manufacturers to processing and to distribution. And I expect that we're probably already partnering with a number of you. But I also expect that if the President's Farm Bill initiatives on cellulosic ethanol are enacted, and I hope they will be, and I feel that is a good strong possibility that they will be, that we will be partnering with many more of you over the years to come. We've come a very, very long way in the last 30 years, but we've got a long way to go yet. Again, I thank all of you for the work that you've done. I thank the Fuel Ethanol Workshop for the opportunity to be with you today, and I wish you the best in the balance of this conference. Thank you again very, very much.